I'm Christopher Lydon, and this is The Whole Wide World. Exploring this hour, the living limbo of a globalizing world, the unlit and usually invisible zone of human displacement, the world of refugees.
We didn't even have half an hour to leave. They told us we had 5 minutes to leave.
You cannot know how it is, how you can feel just overnight you are nobody.
I was persecuted and bombed by America, tried to kill by America, yet I was saved by America.
We are drawing on the magic of the theater director Peter Sellers, who has just restaged a 2,500-year-old Greek play about refugees, The Children of Heracles by Euripides. Part of Peter Sellers' purpose was to let us see and hear the refugee stories that lie mostly hidden in plain sight in the news of our day.
I left my native country because my life and my family's life were in danger. I lost everything.
I was in war. I experienced everything that one woman can experience.
I was waiting for a bus at the Sarajevo bus stop. A mortar fell next to my husband and me. My husband was instantly killed, blown in half, and I was badly wounded.
I think governments, and particularly the United States government, can be moved by human considerations. I don't think it's only politics.
The Whole Wide World is the radio series that tracks symptoms of globalization, trends in finance, culture, and conflict that are pulling this shrinking planet together in new ways, or tearing it up, or both at once. This hour, we're venturing into a teeming terrain of refugees, a sort of underworld of globalization. It's the outward evidence, you could say, of failed politics and economics, but it overflows also with energy and hope. I call it refugia now, this new global nation of refugees. 30 million displaced people, roughly the population of Canada. Though, of course, there's no map of this nation. Somalis in camps in Kenya, Afghans in Pakistan, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, Sudanese and Liberians displaced in their own countries, people on the road, on the run, in treacherous boats, hauling a mighty freight of suffering and heroism and stories of our time. There are three layers to listen for here. The reality of refugees first, but then the use of an ancient Athenian play and modern stages in Europe and the States to reset the refugee stories. And third, the alchemy of Peter Sellers' art, using the technology of the sacred, as he calls theater, to make you think anew about democracy, theater, and public media in general.
Learning to listen differently. Recognizing the path that different people take to get to their reality. I think that's part of sharing the planet. You know, we tend as Americans to have this thing of, you know, we like people who are like us. And people who are not like us make us nervous. And one of the things that I'm so excited by with the young people on stage is we're not going to be like us for long. We're all going to be different. And that's going to be wonderful.
The war started around 91 when I was 7 and a half, turning 8. The gunshots rang out. Rebels came to our homes and told us to leave. My mother didn't think twice and asked us to pack our necessities, and it's time for us to go.
That's Ayesha. She was one of scores of real refugees who told their stories before each performance of The Children of Heracles at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts, this winter. Ayesha left home in Somalia when she was 7 and lived for years in a refugee camp in Kenya.
There are angry people, and there are people that are at peace with everything that's happened. The anger that are in the angry people is of revenge. That's what they feel. They don't think about anything else but revenge. They want to get that person back who did whatever it is to him or her. Then there are people who are at peace who believe that whatever happened to them happened for a reason. That's what basically got me through. My mother. My mother was a woman who was very peaceful with herself first. Then she reached us. She raised us all on her own. Our father left us when I was 2 years old. And when we were fleeing, women were raped around her. She was probably one of them. She just wouldn't tell us, probably. But she kept us in a positive mode. We kept us alive.
She's 20 now, a graduate of high school in America, studying carpentry. She carries the tool of her new trade, a shining Stanley work hammer, on the bib of her overalls.
I received a letter from the INS saying that I can stay in the USA until they decide my status here. So I'm basically just hanging on thread. I believe I'm free here in America. When I was back home, I could not wear pants. I wear them here. When I was back home, I could not work. I can work here. When I was back home, you can never, ever speak your mind against a dictator or some sort of a leader. You will be dealt with. Over here, you can go on Saturday Night Live and insult George Bush and it's all good. USA has given me the opportunity to become a carpenter. You will not see a female carpenter in Africa.
When you get hooked on these stories, and I have, you can conclude that maybe only refugees are entitled, really, to tell the epic of whatever it is the world is going through. And then we need democratic public spaces to air these often disquieting histories.
And that's why the Greeks invented theater, because they knew no one would be safe until we find a way to talk about these things that we're carrying around with us every day, that are eating us up inside, that are having us live with fear, having us live with not being able to deal with the other, the foreigner, whether that's your daughter or whether that's a Persian. Who is this famous other whose very existence fills you with fear?
In the refugee stories, Peter Sellers was presenting people that the news often turns into wallpaper, what television calls B-roll, of Somalian women, say, sitting with kids in front of tents. Peter Sellers wanted to let the wallpaper talk. So just listen to Zhao Jiang from China, Emir Kamenitsa from Bosnia, Torli Krua from Liberia.
Those Chinese immigrants worked every week, every month, for months and months, couldn't see the sun almost. And this is what they do every month. They came to Port Authority. They spend $10 by this stolen phone card, and they call their village. So here's the scene. This guy, he didn't even say much. He just simply cried. And they do this monthly crying out over the phone for the need of some human connection to their own people. And then they went back to their restaurant.
The woman that lived right in the apartment right above mine, whom I knew well, who had coffee in my living room many a time, was the woman that organized the rapes in my high-rise. For me, the hardest thing is to construct the world once you recognize that people that you interact with every day are capable of committing atrocities. On a logistical level, you can't just say that, Milosevic and the people that control the media somehow made this happen. 50,000 women were raped, and, five people don't rape 50,000 women. It takes just logistically a lot of people capable of committing the type of things you don't think will happen.
I was working in a consulate where people were coming every day to try to get a visa to come to the United States, where they had their relatives. And in this place where I was working, I was not part of the visa issuing crew, but I was working on a computer and my back was faced towards those people, but I could hear the conversation. People were coming one after another. I have my son in the state. He has a home. I can go there and I can live. And may I get a visa? And the answer was no. And one person after another, the answer was no, 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 until this certain person came in It was a woman, and she had a little baby about 1.5 years old. And she was saying, everyone was dead now. We are the only two that survived. I have money in the States, in the bank in America. She went to school here in the United States of America, and she left to go back to Liberia. Her son was here, and her son was in the military. They had home. She wanted to come here. And they told her, no, we're sorry, you can't go to America, because if you go, you won't come back. And she was just pleading, and she was crying. She would not leave. And they said, well, we're going to get the security to get you out of here because we have to deal with other clients. She continued to cry, and the security came to pull her away and drag her outside. And while they were trying to get her outside, the little baby screamed so loud that I just had to turn around this time. And when I saw this baby was almost all bone, skeleton, I can see the socket in the eyes of the baby. I mean, it was horrific.
Now here's another refugee voice that Peter Sellers put on stage this winter.
When Heracles was dead and gone, Eurystheus decided to eliminate us too. Our home is gone. And now we stand condemned to keep on wandering from state to state.
That's the old warrior Aeolus in a play that's 25 centuries old. Aeolus is begging the city-state of Athens to give refuge to the homeless children of Heracles. The play tells the story of the banished sons and daughters of the tormented strongman Heracles, another name for Hercules, of the many labors. The bad king of Argos has put the word around Greece, it's war with me if you take in this refugee family.
If their artful talk and wailing move your pity, that can only mean one thing, total war.
The issues in the play were echoed in the refugee interviews I did on stage before every performance. What does a free democracy like Athens or the United States owe to the helpless and the homeless? What's the kinship here? Can you count the degrees of separation between the refugees and us? What's the price of their resettlement, and who pays it?
To hell with you. And you won't drag these refugees away with you and shame us.
That's Demophon, the president of Athens, who embraced the refugees and fought a war to defend them. But to enlist the gods and win the war, the high priests and oracles told Athens that a virgin girl must be sacrificed.
They order me to sacrifice to Persephone a victim, a young woman of noble birth.
It is Macaria, one of the refugee daughters of Heracles, who volunteers to sacrifice her life, and then she dies on stage in a ritualized throat cutting in order that her brothers and sisters can become Athenians. In fact, Peter Sellers once imagined dressing Macaria in the exploding belt of a Palestinian suicide bomber. That's how modern he wanted this ancient play to feel, and how jarring, almost excruciating.
This staging of this play is very, very, very simple. You just have to sit there for 90 minutes while nothing happens and people stand and microphones and talk and you have to listen. And it is just a giant exercise in listening and concentration, and it goes very slowly. It is not entertaining. It is maddening for the audience. It breaks every bone in their body and forces it to be reset. And it is unendurable, but you know, like any 12-step program, eventually liberating.
The unforgettable scene in the play is the death of that girl, Macaria.
Explain this central moment in the play, a very long, almost silent moment in which Macaria, the daughter of Heracles, says, no, she will take the fall. She will give her life to save her brothers, to satisfy the Athenian gods, and bring her people home.
For me, one of the most important images was a young woman who sacrifices herself, teenager, 14-year-old girl. And I did stage it. You know, in the Greek plays, you never show violence on stage. That's one very, very important point of departure between the Greeks and Steven Spielberg and Marty Scorsese. But it's violence must not be shown. I violated that, and I do stage the sacrifice, although the staging is not very violent. It's horrifying, but done with a theatricality that's very abstract. Nonetheless, in fact, that's probably why it's so horrifying, because it's not a whole special effects department. Because we laugh when people get their heads blown off in a movie. And in fact, for me, one of the invisible parts of the society we live in is, you know, we announce we're going to invade Iraq, you know, for freedom and, you know, liberation and this and that. And who is going to actually pay the price for that? Children. Children were the main casualties of the first Iraq war. And they will be the first and main casualties of the next one. And that is constantly, constantly kept off stage from the American public. And so for me, it was very important to show a small girl in a body bag and just for people to look through the clear plastic at little bloody feet just sticking out and just thinking, that's really what we're doing. And that's who will pay the price.
When we come back, Peter Sellers is not just about staging. He's trying to teach us to listen differently. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Whole Wide World, produced in association with WGBH Radio Boston from PRI Public Radio International. Thank you.